Half of Oklahoma is a Native American reservation. There are economic consequences. From Marketplace in New York, I'm Sabri Benishore in for David Brancaccio. A Supreme Court decision Thursday affirmed that about half of the state of Oklahoma is Native American reservation land. The case specifically had to do with who has jurisdiction in criminal cases, but the decision over reservation boundaries could have economic implications as well. For more on this, I'm joined live by Marketplace's Kimberly Adams in Washington. Hi, Kimberly. What is going to change right away?
So the major effect of this ruling in McGirt versus Oklahoma, which was the case, is that it changes how cases against Native Americans accused of crimes in the expanded reservation will be handled and who handles them. And some people convicted under the old system may need their cases reviewed. With a much bigger tribal reservation now, it now covers about 1.8 million people, including a couple hundred thousand in the city of Tulsa. That means there will also need to be some expansion of the tribe's criminal justice infrastructure, which may require some additional resources.
So more resources needed. What else might this ruling change about how things operate financially in that part of Oklahoma?
That's still what's being worked out. And what does this mean for taxes and who pays for infrastructure? Healthcare and education budgets on reservations are often different from those of the state budget. And so this could mean a reallocation of some of those resources, federal monies coming into the area. And the state and the tribes say they have a long history of working together on these issues, and they've already started those discussions.
Who makes those decisions ultimately, you know, where the money goes?
It appears it's going to be several groups. You're going to have the five tribes in the area working with state officials, the congressional delegation, plus some other federal officials. It's probably going to be a long process because this is pretty unprecedented, and there are a lot of business and investment interests at play as well.
All right, Marketplace's Kimberly Adams in Washington. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We do not have a coronavirus crystal ball or a what-if machine, but we do have the rest of the world. Hong Kong, which has successfully controlled the virus, is closing all schools again after a spike in cases. Most schools in the territory have been shut since February, but some had started to reopen. But then 42 new local infections were recorded on Thursday, the second day of a rise in cases, and that was enough for the territory to pull the plug. Hong Kong has recorded only 7 deaths from COVID-19. Martin Yip is there.
It's already a scary figure for many people here because after quite a period of minute number of cases, the problem now is we have 2 clusters at least of presumably locally transmitted cases, 1 cluster from a care home, another cluster from a local cafe. And that's why people are seeing the need somehow to close down a little bit more and the government to bring forward the summer holiday for most of the schools in Hong Kong.
That was Martin Yip with our editorial partner, the BBC. Let's take a look at what the numbers are doing this morning. The FTSE in London is up 0.5%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are down in the 1 to 5/10% range, with the Dow future down 116 points. The 10-year Treasury yield is at 0.58%.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.
3 years after Hurricane Maria destroyed Puerto Rico's government-owned electric grid, the island is still dealing with unreliable service and intermittent power outages, especially in rural areas. Add to that an economy in tatters because of the pandemic, and the Commonwealth's government is calling it quits. It's moving to give up control of the power grid to a private utility. Marketplace's Andy Euler reports that for Puerto Ricans, the move to privatize is inspiring cautious optimism mixed with concern over transparency.
A full year after 2017's Hurricane Maria, some municipal buildings in Mayagüez, a town on the west coast of Puerto Rico, were still without power. That's where Lionel Orama lives with his family. He says that storm led him to install photovoltaic or PV panels on his roof. Now the sun provides a third of his electricity.
After Maria, people have started to develop their PV systems with batteries and separating that load from the grid.
Now, Orama is in a unique position to upgrade his household's power situation. He's a professor of electrical engineering at the University of Puerto Rico.
What we need is a better system working better for the people of Puerto Rico.
The island's government is hoping privatization is the solution. Last month, Luma Energy, a newly created venture between U.S. and Canadian companies, signed a 15-year contract to operate and maintain Puerto Rico's grid. Doug Holtz-Aiken, president of the think tank the American Action Forum, says Puerto Rico's nationalized system just didn't work. And on top of that, it ran up $13 billion in debt to pensioners and bondholders.
This public-private partnership brings some expertise to the island that probably was not otherwise there. And they have this sort of overhang of debt from the past. Privatization is a chance simultaneously to sort of wipe that out.
It's also an opportunity to diversify energy sources. Right now, the majority of Puerto Rico's electricity is generated using oil. But Luma said last month that it wants to incorporate wind, solar, and natural gas because getting oil to the island to generate power isn't cheap.
You would think that this is an opportunity for market penetration by renewables.
Not everyone is optimistic about privatizing the energy sector in Puerto Rico. The Electric Workers Union filed a lawsuit last week against privatization. The suit says the awarding of the contract hasn't been transparent, and that smells of corruption. But Lionel Orama says there's a more immediate concern.
Instead of fighting over the benefits of privatization or nationalization, I would like to hear a discussion on what system do we want for the next hurricane season.
That hurricane season has already started. Orama says the grid needs billions of dollars to strengthen poles, power lines, and generating stations against future storms. I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
And in New York, I'm Sabri Benishour with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.